for those of you that didn't get to join us last week at Lucy Billingsley's presentation, I want to remind you, we did podcast that presentation, so it is available on the website. If you just go there, there's a little link for it. You'll find it really fascinating. She talked about the Chappas Project and gave a good overview of how she got interested into that project, how she set it up, the challenges that she found, the positive outgrowth from it, and gave some good ideas for how we can get involved more individually with those kind of projects, since we obviously may not have several million dollars sitting around to just go out and do something like that. So I would encourage you, if you couldn't make it, please do go listen to the podcast. I think you'll find it very informative. She spoke for about 45 minutes. Part of that time was comprised of a Q&A session, so we did get to have lots of direct feedback from her about very specific issues. All right, this is our second session of the fall. We just regrouped again last month. And for those of you who are here, we talked about how this year we were going to look at different kinds of philanthropy, and especially in terms of cutting edge trends. So we had Janet Jensen last time, and she gave an overview of the different kinds of philanthropy that are out there right now. And we talked about some of the other trends that are coming along. So today is going to be a continuation of that theme. And what we're going to talk about is social enterprise. And probably the one thing in this room we can all agree on is nobody agrees on what that is. Right, Ray? Everybody's got a different definition of what that term means. And Ray's going to clear it all up for us today, so we're all going to know everything about it when we walk out of here today. We're going to continue with these kind of themes throughout the rest of this year and give you a good idea of what's going on in the workplace in terms of philanthropic endeavors. But today is all about social enterprise. And in a minute, I'm going to have Ray get up here, but I'm going to be talking with Ray and Claude today. And many of you in this room already know him. He's the Vice President of Marketing Services for the Center for Nonprofit Management. And he has got a resume that is way too long for me to do, because I would be up here for 10 minutes talking about you instead of having you do your presentation. But in any event, he's going to talk about social enterprise. And what's really intriguing when we met with him about doing this presentation is he's got some really good examples of social enterprise that are going right here in Dallas right now. So that's what we wanted to look at. We wanted to say, okay, what does this term mean? And give us some examples of what's actually happening in the DFW area that are actual good working examples of what this term means and what this philosophy means. So today we're going to hear about that, and he's going to talk about how they identify what assets a particular organization might have, how they identify if they're an appropriate fit to do the concept of social enterprise. So let me just tell you a little bit more about Ray. He has been Vice President of Marketing and Client Services at the Center for Nonprofit Management for several years now, but he has been very involved in the philanthropic world for many, many years. Before being at the Center for Nonprofit Management, he had been at Kilgore in charge of marketing and development there. So he's got a lot of experience in this particular area, and certainly with his experience at Center for Nonprofit Management, he's well poised to talk to us about social enterprise. And we promise nobody in here will disagree with anything that he says today, right? So without further ado,
I wouldn't be used to that.
Well, we just did a caveat for today. It's a very limited
tiny asterisk.
Tiny asterisk. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Ray McLeod and invite you all to ask questions. Ray's going to talk for a little bit, and then we will open it up for Q&A after he speaks.
Thank you.
I'm going to try and move this back a little bit so everyone could see. Can everyone hear me okay? All right, great. You know, I spent a little time when I was first approached with the opportunity to talk to you about social enterprise, learning a little bit more about Dallas Social Venture Partners, and also looking on the Social Venture Partner International site, and specifically looking at the vision around the way your organization is structured and the intent that you have of using not only your time but your business and your financing and venture capital talent to help nonprofit organizations. So to be able to invest your not only your money but your expertise in a way that is very helpful to nonprofits to build their capacity and sustainability. You know, it'd be very different for the for-profit world if each year you had to recapitalize your business from ground zero. But one thing that I saw on the site that I'm going to read is, says, as its core, venture philanthropy is aimed at strengthening and supporting the long-term capacity of a nonprofit to fill its mission rather than funding short-term projects or programs. That's a huge challenge for us in nonprofits, is that focus on funding on a short term. If you have something new and exciting, you can get funding for a short period of time, and then a lot of the foundations are off to the new, next exciting and new opportunities. And social enterprise is aimed at doing that. It's aimed at funding more than short term. It's aimed at long-term financial sustainability. And just thinking about your name, Social Ventures and Social Enterprise, I mean, this is such a fit, not only with the title, but really with the expertise and the whole approach that you have in philanthropy. So what I want to do is start out with a definition of social enterprise. I don't know that I've found two people that have the same definition from social enterprise. So who wants to give me a definition? Does anybody want to share what their thoughts or definition is for a social enterprise? Charlotte, you don't count, unfortunately.
Using the for-profit environment to benefit nonprofit.
Yes, that could be one. Any others? You're really any earned income idea or specific venture related to bringing in unrestricted dollars to an agency is the core of what social enterprise is, to support the charitable work. As far as the field, we have kind of come around to a point, because there are a lot of many different definitions and thoughts. The Social Enterprise Alliance is actually a merger of several other smaller social enterprise organizations, and their tagline is where mission meets the marketplace. And they define social enterprise is one that describes a nonprofit, for-profit, or hybrid corporate form that utilize market-based strategies to advance a social mission. It's pretty general, though. An example of a hybrid corporation is a brand-new organizational structure. It just got approved in the state of Vermont. There are other states looking at this. It's called an L3C corporation. The L3C is a new form of a limited liability corporation that balances the limited liability corporation advantages to nonprofit social mission advantages. And it specifically looks at IRS regulations around private foundations and their PRIs, which are their program-related investments. Private foundations are required to distribute at a minimum 5% of their assets each year. And most people traditionally think of that in the forms of grants. However, with the new L3C corporation, foundations can use their PRI money to make investments in these corporations with a social purpose. And the idea is that these organizations with charitable purposes, like the nonprofit organization, can do larger scale projects and have access to capital and financing for longer term and more expensive ventures. The foundations can make these investments with their PRI and get a return back over time, which is a very different approach to philanthropy. And we expect to see that this is going to be a form of corporation that other states are going to adopt, and we expect to see a lot of increase in the L3C corporations. Social enterprise is not new. Both of these organizations have engaged in it for many, many years. You know, Girl Scouts has been selling cookies for more than 80 years, and surprisingly, it's one of the earliest models of community wealth, and they generate about $700 million a year in cookie sales. It's their number one source of funding for their operations. I think I've bought about half of that over the years. And about 70% of each sale goes back into the local chapters. The YMCA, founded more than 150 years ago, has more than 2,600 chapters across the U.S. with over 11 million members. And their gym fees represent 50 to 70% of the revenue that supports the work of the YMCA. All over the country, nonprofits are operating these enterprises that are generating profits going back into the business. Now, looking at these organizations, the Caroline Center Upholstery, it's a furniture upholstery business. Grayston Bakery manufactures brownies for Ben & Jerry's ice cream and other baked goods. Rubicon Landscape Service provides commercial landscape services. Freedom Wheels is a used car business, and Laser Monks, I love that one. Discount printer cartridges and office supplies. So which of these do you think is not a nonprofit-owned social enterprise? Any guesses? It's actually a trick question. They all are. They all are. The Caroline Center Upholstery is a division of the Caroline Center that provides training to low-income inner-city women. The upholstery business provides services to residential, but more so to commercial interests like hotels, and provides the job training for the clients that they're working with. Grayston Bakery, in addition to the brownies that go into Ben & Jerry's ice cream, does a lot of baked goods. I wish I had a copy of it to show you, but they had a wonderful feature on the bakery on 60 Minutes. And actually, the bakery is owned by the Grayston Foundation, and they have other social service agencies under the umbrella of the foundation, and the bakery actually generates the profits that funds all the work of the foundation. They provide the job training, affordable housing, programs for at-risk kids after school. It's a fantastic model of how social enterprise can really provide a sustainable way to do more in the community. The landscaping service, as I mentioned, is a commercial enterprise designed to serve commercial businesses in California, and they generate millions of dollars that go back into their social service agency. Freedom Wheels is a car business of a nonprofit organization called Vehicles for Change, and they provide refurbished cars for very low-income people so that they can have transportation. One of the challenges to solving issues for people that are homeless or very low income is having transportation to be able to even get to work to hold a job. And this organization provides those vehicles. And what happened is they started getting in vehicles that were really of a market value higher than what was appropriate to be able to just give away. So they created a business designed to capture that higher end market for more affluent buyers. And apparently, from talking with their executive, there are a lot of high school students in that region that are driving around in Freedom Wheels. And then again, Laser Monks is operated by an abbey in Wisconsin, and they sell printer cartridges and other office supplies through a web-based sales office. But each of these organizations, even though they're operating a social enterprise, are using their assets in different ways. The Caroline Center, Grayston, and Rubicon are all using their clients that they work with as a workforce and providing job training and employment for the clients that they're working with. Freedom Wheels is essentially taking what they do and taking in cars, fixing them up, preparing them for market, and serving a new market with that that has provided them with cash so that they can provide more vehicles to their target low-income market. And Laser Monks, you know, they saw the opportunity in the high markups that are going into laser cartridges and other office supplies and decided that that was an opportunity for them. Apparently, you can even send in a prayer request with your order. So identifying assets may be more than you think. Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle was thinking through what their assets were. What kind of assets do you think that a zoo would have that they could leverage to make money?
Besides fertilizer?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I probably needed another slide before this since I put the punchline up there before I started. But that's right, what they found is Zoo Do is a nonprofit organization. They were spending $60,000 a year basically to dispose of the waste. And they had 1 million pounds of compost each year that they were able to package and create this venture, Zoodoo, to sell. And what they've been able to do is the $60,000 that they were spending to remove the waste, they've recouped that plus an additional about $15,000. So that's a $75,000 net swing that they've had that they can provide $75,000 into other areas of their operation. And there's potential for more. They say that 1 out of 3 customers is able to get what they would like to order. So I think they probably need to triple the size of their elephant population. Opportunity 501. How many of you are familiar with Opportunity 501, a nonprofit job listing in Texas? I see a few hands. Yes, yes. Actually, that is a social enterprise of the Center for Nonprofit Management. It's a venture that we have, a program that we have that has its own P&L, and we provide an online and print job listing service targeted specifically to nonprofit jobs in North Texas and across the state. We get ads that come in for Austin, for Houston, for San Antonio, and even in eastern Louisiana. But last year, we had over 1,250 ads that we placed in our publication that for jobs within nearly 500 nonprofit organizations. We have an express service where you can have your job posted in 24 hours or less online. And the revenue that we had last year, which has quadrupled over the last 4 years, was $213,000 off job advertisements. And it cost about 1/5 what it would cost you to put a print-only ad with your line limitations in the Dallas Morning News. You get a print and online listing targeted for people that work in the nonprofit sector. And we had over 1 million hits on our website for that service specifically last year. But social enterprise isn't the silver bullet, the panacea that a lot of people think it is. It does have critics and it does have some limitations. You know, some of the critics are saying that it's not for everyone. It's not a good fit. It takes people's focus off of their charitable purpose and puts it onto a commercial purpose. But there are some pluses and minuses to consider. Harvard wrote a article, Should Nonprofits Seek Profits? And they were concerned with the level of foundation support for pushing more and more nonprofit organizations towards operating these social enterprises so that they can promote the earned income and be more sustainable. Another foundation called Seedco Foundation wrote an article or a report called The Limits of Social Enterprise. And they talked about how nonprofits, it's such a cultural difference that many nonprofits can become frustrated with the process and ultimately lead to a high rate of failure. And I'll talk a little bit later about what we know about the successes of social enterprise. So while it can be very worthwhile on one side and risky on another, there are some things to consider. First of all, nonprofits generally are not going to be able to fund their entire operation through social enterprise. But what they can do is reduce their reliance on contributed dollars and gain more unrestricted money into their operations where they have some discretion on how they are able to use that and how they go to scale. Imagine if a for-profit corporation was forced to limit their ability to provide technology support, to provide sales and marketing for their products, if their funders expected for them only to spend 10% of their money on those efforts and 90% into the product itself. Real challenge there. And again, it doesn't generate a limitless. There are some limits to the amount of money that you can realistically be able to attribute to a social enterprise, but that can be very sizable. And one thing that's very important about the unrestricted money is it gives you opportunities to invest in scaling programs that you may not have through restricted foundation grants. It gives you, again, that discretion. But it's no different than launching a for-profit enterprise. You basically have, according to the SBA, a 50-50 chance of success. And the keys to being successful are really the same, whether it's a nonprofit doing this or a group trying to set up a regular for-profit enterprise. You have to have the capacity, you have to have the talent, you have to have the business plan and the correct assumptions on how you're going to handle your products and what market you're going to be serving. It also demands skill sets that are not necessarily typical to all nonprofits, but what we are seeing are higher levels of sophistication among the staff. And then, of course, this really speaks to the work that you're doing here at Dallas Social Venture Partners, bringing in these core competencies and business skills that you possess into the work of the nonprofit organizations in a way that even if you disengage after your work through several years, there's a certain amount of that competency that is retained into the organization itself and can lead them to be able to operate in a better way. They can evaluate their programs, they can finance their operations in a more sophisticated level that ultimately will make them more sustainable, even beyond the terms of the engagement that they are able to have with you. Now, one thing to think about with social enterprise is profit should not be the only motive. Usually those who have profit as the only motive are going to not be as successful or fail at a higher rate, because you really have to tie your social enterprise and your profits with what the mission of your organization is. That's a real balancing act that you have to look at. So what I want to do is define some of the social enterprise terms that are common in the field. One thing that I heard when I first came on board at the center was this theory of a double bottom line, which was a very new concept to me. But it's considered a very definitive benchmark for nonprofit organizations, thinking about the return of the revenue that we're able to generate and the social return on investment, which brings up a whole new topic that's being talked about with nonprofit ROI and doing the social math, which goes way beyond the revenue that we're bringing in and the amount of money that we're expending to get the results. But what are the longer term or higher level impact from an economic standpoint? You know, if we are able to provide job training and, you know, we know that 5 years later, these adults are still employed. I know that in talking earlier with Special Care and Career Services about some of the results of their program, they know the longer term impact. They also know what is the economic impact on our communities as a result of those people being employed for at least 5 years, and in some cases more than 25 years. And not only that, what is the net result on savings for our state, our and local and federal government on reducing the amount that they're having to pay out in social services? These are all indicators that really need to be considered in the social enterprise world. And now there's talk of a triple bottom line. Not only do you have the financial and the mission or social indicators, but you also have a lot that are working that have an environmental impact. So being able to generate more money and have a greater social impact while doing something positive for the environment is now leading to a discussion about a triple bottom line. Of course, I think everybody in the room is very familiar with the financial return on investment, but the social return is really talking about the non-financial outcomes of the work we do. If we limit what we talk about to only return on investment and ratios of expenses to results, you know, we're going to be leaving a lot out. And social enterprise, part of the advantage is the ability to do more and serve more people. Because when nonprofits are not able to reach their revenue goals, you know, it's not that shareholders have a lower return on their investment or dividends are cut. It means they have to turn people away. And when you are serving populations that really need help, to turn people away is gut-wrenching for people in the nonprofit organizations that have to look somebody in the eye. We did a volunteer project last week. The center staff closed the office, and we worked at Central Dallas Ministries. And with the extra demand with the evacuees from the hurricane, the pantry supplies were very low. And we had people that were coming in, and we were helping them to get the allotment of food that they were allowed based on the size of their family and a few other variables. And one lady, it was just pitiful. You know, she's like, this is all I get. And they can only come back, you know, after 30 days of after they've been there. So, you know, it's very hard to say no and to turn away people in need. And the social enterprise gives us an opportunity to really grow what we can do for others. Earned income strategies are really just what we're trying to do to cover the program cost or generate a profit to help us underwrite other parts of the business. And unrelated business income. This is something that really scares people. It scares board members to death when they start talking about unrelated business income and paying UBIT taxes. When you have income that's not directly related to the charitable purpose of the organization, it qualifies as a taxable income. And that can be okay. You have to record it. You have to pay the taxes on that portion of income. Oftentimes, nonprofit organizations that are going to have a for-profit subsidiary or program that has unrelated business income will set that up as its own unit so that they can make a clear delineation between the organization that's generated unrelated income. But I'm definitely not an attorney. If you're thinking about starting a social enterprise with any of your investees, I would recommend that you leverage some of your legal talent on that. Now, the only real danger is if the level of income that you're generating off a social enterprise that has unrelated business income to your charitable purpose gets too high, it could jeopardize the 501c3's tax-exempt status. That's the real danger in that. But again, that's something that could be managed. Community Wealth Ventures. Has anyone in the room besides Charlotte heard of Community Wealth Ventures and Kathy? Okay. Community Wealth Ventures is a wonderful and a very interesting story about an organization that was created to help others create social enterprises. A man named Bill Shore, very innovative and interesting speaker, who founded Share Our Strength, also founded Community Wealth Ventures. There's a book that he has written about that story called The Cathedral Within, and it's a fascinating book. And I would recommend you ought to pick that up if you want to read about social enterprise and kind of the ideas and some of the ways that social enterprise came together for Share Our Strength and for Bill Shore. Since it was founded in 1984, they have raised more than $200 million through Share Our Strength to fund anti-hunger and poverty programs. They've distributed grants to more than 1,000 nonprofit organizations. Through a connection, when Bill Shore was in Denver, he met one of the most well-known chefs in the Denver area. And that led to an event that's now national called A Taste of the Nation. Many of you may have participated in the one locally. You have these executive chefs with a lot of notoriety that basically donate their time and talent to prepare dishes that public can come and basically buy tickets, make donations for, and sample all of these wonderful dishes that these chefs are so widely recognized for. The byproduct of that was all these food suppliers and restaurant equipment suppliers that wanted to have access to this market. And as a result, they were able to create a lot of licensing opportunities. They were able to do some cause marketing revenue and sponsorship revenue. In fact, Evian has given them $500,000 just to be able to donate their water to these events. Not only are we going to donate all of the Evian water, we're going to pay you $500,000 to be able to do that. Other equipment manufacturers, if you'll let us put our equipment out for the chefs to use to prepare the food on that day, we'll give you this and we'll give you that. That's how this all started. And then there were so many organizations that were coming to Bill Shore and asking, how did you do this? How did you generate all this money out of the market for your organization, that Community Wealth Ventures was founded to provide a structure and a methodology around how other nonprofits could take the same approach and apply that to the situation that they are in. You know, as early as 2005, the center itself, we were talking, you know, internally and as part of nonprofit management centers around the country in our field about how important it was for us to really get into the social enterprise game and be helping nonprofit organizations that wanted to investigate social enterprise to be able to do so, to be able to have a process, if it makes sense to be able to do this, to go through to set up these earned income businesses. In March 2006, we hosted a forum on social enterprise, and we brought in Bill Shore. Little did we know at that time that Bill and his board was talking about how could we, now that we've been in operation for 10 years, how could we develop a way to make social enterprise more sustainable across the country? And what ended up coming from that is the partnership that we have today. The North Texas Collaborative is the partnership that we have with Community Wealth Ventures. The model that they have used primarily for social enterprise is to go into a community more on the East Coast and in Ohio than other parts of the country, but there was a collaborative in San Antonio, and now we have one that we just completed our first year here in Dallas. And what they have done is approach different foundations to make investments and pool that money to provide these multi-year projects where they take groups of nonprofit organizations and they apply to be in the program, they get screened and vetted, and then these organizations create a venture team. They come in through a 10-month process. It's a combination of full-day training sessions with one-on-one consulting in between the sessions that leads them from talking about what do we have that's valuable to a finished business plan that's ready to raise capital to launch. The goals that we have are to create community wealth by helping nonprofit organizations simply start and operate these social enterprises. And beyond that, to build their organizational capacity to really increase the level of sophistication about the way they do business internally. What we've learned from the organizations that we worked with and what Community Wealth Ventures has learned with the organizations that they have worked with throughout the last 10 years is not only does it help the nonprofit with that specific venture idea that they have, but overall, it really increases the level of sophistication that they have in the way they run the business and the way they run their programs and the way they evaluate growth and scaling their operations. These are the 8 agencies that we worked with in year one. I didn't look to see if any of these are some of your investees, but most of these are very recognizable names in Dallas and in Fort Worth. We had 3 agencies that came out of Tarrant County for this first year. So what I want to do is just kind of give you an idea of what some of these ventures look like. The Autism Treatment Center's venture is a autism diagnostic and therapy rehabilitation services agency that works on an outpatient basis. They're in the process of getting certified to receive Medicare and Medicaid and receive third-party health insurance coverage. Increasingly, some of the diagnostic and clinical needs of people with autism are being covered by some of the insurance agencies. And this is a way for them to be able to generate some income that they can then put back into their autism treatment services for those who do not have the ability to pay. Big Thought has a venture. It's a cultural resource partnership consulting service. And kind of like the model with Community Wealth Ventures, Big Thought was able to really create these partnerships between educational institutions, you know, the independent school district, and the vast level of cultural assets that we have in the community to where there's a greater connection and greater use of what we have in the way of our cultural assets with the kids that are in our school systems. Other major cities were interested in learning how they did that, how they put this together, how does it work. And they actually are under a contract right now with the city of Portland where they are working with them to help them replicate the model that they were able to do here in Dallas. And their venture is one that will provide these services to other major metropolitan areas across the country. Catholic Charities of Fort Worth, their venture is a translation and interpretation service. They work with a very large pool of immigrants. And between that pool of immigrants, there is a tremendous diversity of language knowledge. The court systems have very limited access to interpretation services. So they have a social enterprise where they will be providing on a fee-based basis interpretation skills for the court systems. A child care group has a proprietary database of 5,400 licensed and regulated child care agencies. And they have a web-based child care resource and referral service leveraging that database. People that are new to the community or people that are living here that have children and they decide that it's time for needing some child care assistance, they have access now to this database of 5,400 child care providers and on a fee-based basis. So this is going to provide revenue to the child care group and provide a very valuable service to parents who are looking for good, viable, and vetted child care options for their kids. The Dallas Children's Advocacy Center is expanding products for their Crimes Against Children conference. It's an annual conference that's very well attended, but they are wanting to grow sponsorships for the conference and provide ways that they can leverage the content from that to sell products on a package basis to others around the country that are trying to follow some of the same models that they are using, and also to provide some web-based accredited training for people who need the continuing credits to work with children who are victims of abuse. Metroport Meals on Wheels has a dry goods store, Sadie's Dry Goods, new and used, and it supports the Meals on Wheels program. Safe Haven of Tarrant County has Berry Goodbyes Thrift Store. And the Senior Source is focusing on a fee-based geriatric care and case management service for a market of adults that have the ability to pay for these services. Right now, they're providing services at no charge, based on the income of senior citizens that do not have the ability to pay. There are limitations to the level that they're able to go with these services and with the case management, but there are plenty of people who are in a position to need these services and have the ability to pay. And I think we all know what the projections are for our aging population in the coming year, so there's a very strong market potential for Senior Source. So I went through and I looked through the business plans and I wanted to kind of share with you what the financial projections are. At the end of year one, these eight enterprises are projected to bring in almost $4 million in revenue. Now their net profit is actually a net loss for the first year of just a little under $20,000. That's because three of the organizations are projecting a net loss, and one of them is an over $200,000 net loss because they have a lot of startup cost associated with the diagnostic equipment they have for their venture. But looking down the road to the third year, you have almost $7.4 million in anticipated revenue and net profits of more than $1.25 million. That comes out to nearly $160,000 average for each agency at the end of 3 years that they'll be able to return into their parent operations to fund the programs. So looking at the process that we use, this is the process developed and vetted by Community Wealth Ventures over the last 10 years that they've been doing these services. We start with asset identification And then we look at what are the opportunities that we have with those assets, and screening the opportunities, doing a feasibility assessment, deciding on our best opportunity, and writing our business plan from that. And I want to talk a little bit about each of these. You know, the assets that we have in the nonprofit sector are not always what we could consider the traditional assets. Most people, when you ask about assets, they think about, you know, the physical plant. What do we have in the way of manufacturing capacity? What do we have in the way of technology? But looking at what is it that we have, what is it that we do, and what do we know that may be valuable to a market? And is it unique? And is it sustainable over time? From that, we take this list of assets that we have and brainstorm what ideas, what would be our opportunities for taking that and turning that into an enterprise that generates profits that could go back into our operations. From there, we screen those opportunities, and we have a matrix that we use that really looks at two criteria. What is the level of the ease of implementation of this venture? And balance that against what is the financial and social return on investment that we project. Is it going to be more difficult to implement this, but yet the longer-term payoff is very high? Is this, low-hanging fruit, if you will? Is this something that we could do rather easily and generate profit from this, but those profits could be incremental compared to some of the other opportunities? When we do the feasibility analysis, it's really about making the go and no-go decision. And the considerations that we have are, you know, what is the market size and what is the outlook? What is the competitive landscape and what would be our competitive advantage? What is the ease of entry for this and how does this fit with our core skills? How does this fit with our mission and how does this fit with our resources? And from this, it really helps us to develop what is the most promising opportunity that we have and that we can focus on. It's really important that you do this before you go into the whole business planning process because you really need to have a good criteria for a go or no-go decision before you invest that time in the business plans. But the business planning process, I think most of you are very familiar with business plans and what they look like. One of the exercises that the participants go through is a process mapping. Exactly how are we going to carry this out? Who is going to do what? What is the flow of work going to look like? What are the assets that are going to be required at the different points within this business plan? It's an exercise that nonprofits aren't traditionally accustomed to going through. But again, it's a very valuable piece of what we do, and it's a valuable piece that the nonprofit organization can then apply to all of the other things that they do in their work. Of course, after raising the startup capital, you have the opportunity to implement the programs. I think it's important to look at how successful are social enterprises, especially when you look at comparing small business incubators to the social enterprise. The small business incubators basically help small businesses go through some of the same processes that we're doing with the community wealth exercises to develop a business plan that's vetted based on the kind of criteria that are going to help them to be successful. And what we've learned is that these social enterprises are at least as successful as those enterprises that are launched through these small business incubators. We have about 73% of the ventures that are either operating or planning the launch of their operations. We have 6% that have postponed their launch, and it could be that they are, usually it's going to be a result of trying to develop some more internal capacity, or it may be delayed in having to really raise the capital that's required for them to get started. Only 8% have operated and closed down their venture, and 14% have decided not to launch. Some are going back to the drawing board and reassessing their venture ideas. Some are looking at doing another venture. One of the things that's very interesting is of the organizations that have participated in the collaborative and launched social enterprises, almost one out of four have already launched a second enterprise to the one that they started with. And looking at the funder return on investment, collectively in these collaboratives where the foundations have all pooled money to help nonprofits go through this process, the funder investment right now is $3,017,000. That's the total investment so far. Looking at the revenues that were reported by the nonprofits that have these enterprises going, those enterprises are generating over $10.5 million. So we have almost four times the return on investment. They've been able to secure almost $2 million in startup capital to help launch these ventures. And 73% said that they are able to serve more people as a result of what they're generating off their social enterprise. And almost 80% say they are now able to serve new and or different customers than they were able to reach before. So there are clear economic successes and there are clear social mission successes related to the social enterprises. So after unloading all that information on you, I want to give you an opportunity to ask questions. I may defer to Charlotte because she's actually the social enterprise expert at the center. Yes?
You mentioned that a nonprofit might be in jeopardy of losing their 501c3 status if the revenue that was generated by a social enterprise became too high. Do you have any clue as to what that ceiling might be?
No, and it's generally not if the real danger is if the income you're generating is subject to UBIT, unrelated business income tax. So what the rationale is if the venture that you're doing really isn't related to your charitable purpose and it's generating a significant amount of money in proportion to what the organization is doing that has the charitable purpose, there could be some danger in your tax-exempt status. But if the money that you're generating is related to your mission, you don't have that same threshold of risk. Yeah.
Yeah. On that previous slide, you said 73% were successful or about to be launched and so forth. But earlier you said that the success rate for business in general is like 50-50 mm-hmm. based on something. What accounts for the difference? The process?
The process, you know, the 50-50 that the SBA puts out is just based on strictly how many small businesses start and fail. The comparative here is looking at the nonprofits who go through this process to assist them and equip them with the tools and the process.
It's a more rigorous process.
Right. And it's comparing that to the small business incubators where they're helping small businesses put together their business plans in a very structured way. They receive coaching, they receive guidance, and they receive some of the tools to be able to do that rather than guessing at it and putting together a homemade business plan, if you will. Yes?
Actually, the SBA data is about 80-20 after 5 years. 80% of the businesses that have started 5 years later are not there, okay? And so, but your incubator rates, both for what you're doing and for incubator rates, it reverses it. In incubators, 80% of the businesses are there at least after 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a relationship.
Yeah.
And this is a good start.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Are they the social enterprise things that are set up, are they separate entities from the 501c3, or can they be?
They can be. They don't have to be. And it really depends on, the size. How closely related is it to the mission? Is it something where the skills of the staff that run the social enterprise are very much aligned with the nonprofit organization, or is it something that would require a completely different type or level of employee than the nonprofit program? So it really is, aligning what do we have in the way of our internal competencies, our skills, our resources, and does it make more sense to set up an enterprise that's a separate organization or not. A nonprofit can own a for-profit, but vice versa, you can't have. Yes?
What are the average startup costs? Can you quantify that at all? And where do most nonprofits find that money?
I don't know. Do you, Charlotte? Do you know what the
I don't know what the average is. I can tell you about the 8 cohorts that we went through, and it tends to be somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000. But I think it's, you know, the reason it's less than perhaps most startup businesses is because they already, many of them are already in this business. They're just not getting paid for their products and services. So they're taking something that they're already doing and turning it into a fee for service. So I think that tends to minimize some of the startup costs. Now, if they're starting up brand new and it's not a service that they offer, then obviously the startup costs are higher. So it really, when I give you an average, it's a blend of zero to a higher number.
And is that including some basic marketing materials?
Mm-hmm. And that includes all the marketing, and that's right. That's
and
right.
The funding sources are from
funding sources can be from foundations, but they can also be from angel investors. It can be from lines of credit at the bank. And the business plan is a very professional, for-profit-oriented business plans. There really is no difference between this business plan mm-hmm. and what for-profit would put together. So they're very professional and ready to go to a bank.
And one of the organizations is creating shares where investors buy units in the company, and they receive, I want to say, like 80% of the profit until that investment is returned to them. And then after that time frame, the model flips to where the nonprofit enterprise gets to keep that money. And I think one of the expectations is that a lot of the angel investors, once they get their money back, will end up just giving those units back to the parent. And that's the way that they've gone about creatively looking at a way to finance the startup. Yes?
Do you have a sense of the mix of those that their social enterprise is very related to what they're already doing, like the elderly care mm-hmm. that's right up their alley, versus somebody that says, let's just open a gas station down on this corner because we own some property? I would assume it's mostly associated, but how much of it is we just decided we're going to go out and buy a franchise and operate that for, you know, to help fund their operations?
Mm-hmm. Well, even in some of those cases, if they're an organization that's working with youth or adults, they may be doing job training and providing employment to clients that they're working with that would make that enterprise related to their work. As far as the unrelated, I don't have a good feel for that.
Mm-hmm. And 100% or something is a product or a service that they're already providing. Now, the exception to that might be thrift stores. There were two thrift stores
mm-hmm.
out there.
Mm-hmm.
But
still, it's not totally unrelated.
Exactly. It's not like the Girl Scouts doing cookies. Right?
It'd be interesting to... We might be able to get some of that information for Charlotte to share for you at a later day, because one of the pieces of Community Wealth Ventures is they have a social franchise unit that strictly deals with franchise operations as social enterprises for nonprofits. I don't have any data from that, but we might be able to track some of that down and provide that to you all at another time. Yeah.
Just a comment. You may want to call them guardian angels instead of angels. Because angel investment is a term of art, okay? And angel investors generally... are looking at 10x returns, just like venture capitalists, except they go in at an early stage in a business or seed money, and you have to have a certain net worth to be accredited angel investor. So, quote, angel investment is really private or oriented, and I think that what you're talking about, if you're getting really low rate of returns, you're guardian angels.
Okay, very good point.
One more question for you.
Yes.
You're in the process of looking at your next cohort.
Yes.
Applications. What specifically are your criteria? And inside of that, do you assess like the leadership's attitude and anything around the board or executive director?
All of those things. You want to describe the process, Char?
Yeah, I would tell you it's a very robust application process. And so we look at the financial strength of the organization. That clearly is an indicator. And then we look at the team that will be supporting this, because it is such a robust process that they really need to have the capacity, the resources to be able to support this. So we look, you know, at the level of
do ask subjective questions around their readiness criteria, their ability to tolerate risk. I can't remember all the other questions on that, but I feel like it's a pretty comprehensive look.
We do site visits, and we actually have the applicants come in and do a presentation to a panel of venture capitalists, people like you. In fact, there may be some interest in the room of participating at some level as far as being a panelist and asking the hard questions. They ask some very piercing questions of the nonprofits about their assumptions and their ability to do this. So it really helps them, you know, start thinking at a higher level as far as what is our ability, what do we perceive our ability to be to really pull this off. And that really helps us vet those applicants into the pool of the agencies most likely to be able to succeed.
Okay. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.